Good day, everyone. You're listening to Animal Voices on CIUT 89.5 FM in the Toronto area or online at www.ciut.fm. You might be listening to us on satellite or through our podcast as well. We're terribly accessible nowadays. If you missed last week's giveaway show, there's still time to enter, and we're giving away the book, The China Study, a $70 hemp foods package, vegan fusion world cuisine, a vegan essentials gift certificate, and a new vegan fitness DVD and calendar. We gave away practically everything but Lamia. So check that out and learn more about all of that stuff, and you can listen to some of our archived shows at www.animalvoices.ca. So Canada's next federal election is scheduled for January 23rd, and the animal advocacy movement in Canada seems kind of divided on who to throw its electoral weight behind, if at all. The NDP, while not exactly mentioning any changes they would make for non-human animals in this country, at least represent a party that is trying to steer the government more to the left, which would possibly be more sympathetic to animal issues. The Green Party, on the other hand, want to make some big changes. They've got an animal protection plank unparalleled in politics, I think, written by Rebecca Aldworth, who we've had on the show several times talking about the seal hunt. We even spoke with her while she was on the in the helicopter actually overlooking the hunt. But since the Greens stand at about 5 or 6% in recent polls, are they a viable option, or is it possibly a wasted vote, as some might say? Today we are joined in studio by the leader of the Green Party of Canada, Mr. Jim Harris, and from Prince Edward Island, the Green Party's environment critic, Ms. Sharon Labchuk. Jim, first I'll welcome you to the show.
Well, it's great to be here, Rob.
And welcome back to CIUT. You hosted a show here a while ago.
Yeah, back in the early 90s I had a show here for 2.5 years called Songs of Hope, looking at, it was spoken word. It started on Thursdays for a half hour, moved to Saturday mornings for an hour, and looked at success stories, environmental success stories all across Canada.
Sounds pretty cool. And on the phone, we've got Sharon Labchuk from PEI. I think she's sheltering from a winter storm there. She works with Earth Action, and for the past 10 years, she has been involved mainly with industrial agriculture and environment issues, as well as opposing the commercial East Coast seal slaughter. She became involved with the Green Party as a candidate in the 2004 election and is now the environment critic, co-chair of the Shadow Cabinet, and Atlantic Canada organizer. Sharon, welcome to the show.
Hi there, Rob. Hi, Jim.
Hey, Sharon.
It's excellent that you both could be here. As well as to our listeners, you'll have a chance to call into the show today at 416-946-7000 and ask these two your questions about their animal welfare policies or anything at all about the Green Party to help you make an informed decision on January 23rd. Well, Sharon, first I'd like to ask you about your role with the Green Party. Tell us about that.
Well, like you mentioned, I'm a candidate. I became a candidate for the first time in 2004 and got fairly involved at various levels in the party since then, including in the shadow cabinet and various committees. And I became involved in writing platform for this current election as the environment critic. And I was responsible for generating planks for the environment section of the platform. And that's really how the animal protection plank came about. I had a look around at who might be the best person in Canada to take this task on. And I went looking around the country and talked to all sorts of people, and eventually seemed like all roads ended up with Rebecca Aldworth. And I was absolutely thrilled to have Rebecca work with us and develop the animal protection plank we have now.
And tell us about some of the highlights of the plank.
Oh, there are so many. It's so long. where would I start? I guess overall, it's a pretty radical plank in terms of what's existing now in Canada in terms of legislation and in terms of what other parties propose, if in fact they even do propose any changes to animal welfare legislation in Canada. What I'm most happy about is that we have come out clearly against the seal hunt. Now, this happened before the animal protection plank came into being, but I think that really staked out our ground, that really identified the Green Party as being different from the other parties, that we will not buy into the industrialization of nature, into animal cruelty, and that we're not afraid to stand up for what we believe in. In the animal protection plank, we have quite a bit of information on what we would do, say, with farmed animals, much more humane treatment of animals in Canada, but going beyond simply reforming and tinkering with legislation concerning farm animals, we go even further back. We want to eliminate factory farming entirely. It's not good enough just to try and make the lives of farmed animals more comfortable. We want to get rid of factory farming entirely and replace it with smaller, organic, local economies, which would inherently allow much better treatment of animals. So that's the farmed animals. We've got all kinds of information on what we would do in terms of, say, slaughterhouses and animal transportation, like no transportation of farm animals. I think we're saying eight hours in duration or 500 kilometers. We've got planks on animals and entertainment. We would ban animals and entertainment in circuses and in novelty acts, traveling shows, that sort of thing. Rodeos, any kind of baiting of animals, harassment of animals in rodeos. We're not going to stand for that.
Yeah, I think this is excellent. I want to address two issues that you mentioned separately. First, the seal hunt. Jim, I want to get your comment on the seal hunt.
Well, the Green Party took an unprecedented stance in Canadian politics, calling for an outright ban on the commercial seal hunt and an end to federal subsidies to this barbaric practice. And we launched the policy in Newfoundland. And at the start of the show, you were saying, you know, should maybe the NDP be given support? Well, Rick Smith was the chief of staff for Jack Layton, and he was forced to resign because of his opposition to the seal hunt within the NDP. So that's the amount of support the NDP gives for animal welfare issues and rights. So we've come out with the unique position, the only party in Canada to have this position. And when we look at the practice, it's generated opposition to it all around the world for decades, you know, dating all the way back to the 1960s and Brigitte Bardot. Really, it's a barbaric practice, and it has no place in Canada. And when we look at it, even on the economic side of things, Sir Paul McCartney came out just 2 days before our announcement and said, if Canada did not end this practice this coming spring, he would begin boycotts of Canadian products, fisheries products, in the spring. American groups jumped on board. And at risk is $2.8 billion of Canadian fisheries exports. And then let's look at sealing. It represents less than 3% of just Newfoundland's fisheries. Hmm. So our fishery is from PEI and from New Brunswick and Nova Scotia and British Columbia. It's going to affect all those places for this tiny, tiny bit of revenue, 3% of fishery income in Newfoundland, and it's a barbaric practice, and it should be banned completely.
And Sharon, you're on the East Coast. Tell us how the Green Party is negotiating their stance against the East Coast seal hunt with East Coast voters.
Well, polls show that in PEI and New Brunswick, most people are opposed to the seal hunt. In Nova Scotia, it's about 50-50, but they have their own gray seal issues, and there's support there for killing gray seals, increasing support. Newfoundland, obviously, the majority of people there support the seal hunt. So it has been difficult for us in Newfoundland to organize. I'm the Atlantic Canada organizer, so it has been difficult there. But 20% of Newfoundlanders do oppose that seal hunt. That represents 80,000 voters. And it takes time for change to happen in places like Newfoundland, where they have had a long history of killing seals. And we're prepared to stay with it for the long term. We're prepared to work in Newfoundland. Options to the seal hunt. I mean, the seal hunt, like Jim said, is barbaric. And you've got seal killers who admit that this is barbaric, that it's dehumanizing, and it's very dangerous for them as well. And without federal subsidies, we would definitely not be seeing this scale of seal killing going on. So we want to look at what other options are available in those communities for people who are engaged in it now and would lose income. But bear in mind, that in the sealing industry, each sealer generally makes about $1,000 over the course of the annual seal slaughter. So individually, it's not a lot of lost income. The people who hunt seals are also generally fishermen, and they have a fair bit of income in that area. But we do want to work in Newfoundland looking at alternatives to the seal kill.
Jim, you might have mentioned this before, but do you know what the amount of the federal subsidies is?
Yes, over the last number of years, it's been about $20 million in subsidies. So we have a federal government that is subsidizing this practice that actually is going to put at risk $2.8 billion of fishery exports across Canada.
And that's our Canadian tax dollars.
Absolutely.
That's going to subsidize this. And then the products that are taken from the seals, I mean, they're not distributed across Canada. I don't see any seal products here in Toronto. I mean, what's happening with these products, like the fur and the seal oil and things like that?
Well, some are used for exports, obviously, and part of this research is part of these federal subsidies are working to find new products for seals. But, I mean, what we're focused on is the nature of it. I mean, there's documentation of, these baby seals being clubbed to death, of them being skinned some while they're still alive. It's just the snow runs red with blood. These are beautiful animals, and there's no reason to be engaged in this.
And several countries around the world have definitely come out against it. Was this a party-wide stance?
Well, we voted at our general meeting in August of 2004, and 93% of members voted in support of it. So it's pretty overwhelming call for the ban to this commercially. Now, one proviso to say is Aboriginal people who've traditionally hunted seals, of course, we in no way want to infringe on their rights to live their traditional lifestyle. So it is in no way, it's an end to the commercial seal hunt, not preventing Aboriginal peoples from pursuing their traditional lifestyle at all.
And I guess this is because on the Green Party, I believe, does not oppose subsistence hunting of wild animals, but they are opposed to the seal slaughter.
The commercial aspects, absolutely. So if somebody was killing a seal to feed their own family, that's okay. But not on a commercial scale, not to generate products and sell them and export them, and unacceptable.
And how would that kind of thing be evaluated? I'll let Sharon.
Well, I wanted to jump in here and add, besides the inhumanity of the act itself, there are ecological concerns. The Gulf of St. Lawrence is completely and utterly devastated by commercial industrial activities. Everybody knows that the cod industry is totally wiped out, and the species is not on the endangered species list, but it should be on the endangered species list. Mm. The science clearly shows that killing off seal populations in the Gulf of St. Lawrence is not going to bring back the cod industry, and in fact, it's further mucking about with a system that we know very little about. I mean, humans know some things about the ecology of this planet, but generally we know very little. And for us to go in there and take out hundreds of thousands of seals on an annual basis is further messing about with the ecology of a system that we know very little about and that we've already severely damaged. If you look at accounts of what it was like when some of the first Europeans arrived in the Gulf of St. Lawrence, you can read in Farley Mowat's book, Sea of Slaughter, historical accounts of the abundance of wildlife. It's beyond belief now. I mean, we could hardly imagine what it must have been like when they could just drop buckets into the ocean and pull up buckets full of fish. You could almost walk across the water that was so abundant with fish and birds and mammals. And now the Gulf of St. Lawrence is emptying very quickly. So for us to go in and think that we have the intelligence and the knowledge to manage a seal population in the Gulf of St. Lawrence is highly arrogant and very wrong.
Just to add to what Sharon said, about 1 million seals have been slaughtered over the last 3 years. That's a staggering number. And if you look at Dr. Ram Meyer's work, he's out of Halifax, he has documented how populations of large fish have been decimated by 90% from 1950 levels. So if we look at the number of fish, and large fish, he's meaning whales, shark, marlin, tuna, cod. Large fish in our oceans have been the population levels decimated by 90%, meaning only 10% are left. And this is a tragedy of unprecedented proportions. And it's part of a mindset that nature is something there to be exploited, to be relentlessly pursued to the brink of extinction. And it's something there for our utilitarian use. That nature has no inherent value in and of itself. But the Aboriginal people see spirit, or the creator, in all things. And all life forms have an inherent beauty and right to be within them and are due respect. And it's a very different philosophy from a Western philosophy of we can go slaughter these seals or we can hunt whales to extinction.
And commodify everything.
Commodify everything as opposed to see the God or the Great Spirit or the Creator in everything. And one of the things the Green Party is very close to Aboriginal wisdom about seeing that spirit in everything, seeing the beauty in this world of ours and wanting to leave that beauty for our children and our grandchildren. And when you see these seals, they are beautiful beyond belief. And so it's about protecting the inherent beauty for future generations of this planet.
I know you mentioned something that could replace some of the jobs that might be lost or some of the income that might be lost. You mentioned ecotourism, going
Absolutely.
Out to see the seals instead of destroying them.
Well, it was thought this very same kind of protest in response to our announcement occurred when Canada banned the hunting of seals, and people said, oh, we're going to lose all these whaling jobs, and what are we going to do? And people soon discovered that ecotourism and whale watching generated far more income than slaughtering whales. And so we believe that we need to protect this inherent beauty. But we shouldn't even make the economic argument.
That's inherent
for its beauty, its right for future generations. But we look to other industries as well to provide economic activity for Newfoundlanders and people living in Labrador, such as wind power. Canada has one of the best profiles of any country in the world for wind power, which, by the way, is growing by 20% a year compounded. And Denmark, 20 years ago, began a strategic focus on wind power, and in the intervening two decades, they've created 20,000 jobs. And we call these green-collar jobs. You know, you've heard of blue-collar, you've heard of white-collar. Well, green-collar are sustainable economically and sustainable environmentally. And, of course, being by the ocean, right on the ocean, Newfoundland and Labrador have an incredible profile for wind power. So we could have a burgeoning industry. And when Mr. Charest, the Premier of Quebec, announced a $1.9 billion wind power program, it was the largest in the world's history. Very exciting. But the bad news was that 70 cents on the dollar is going to American, German, and Danish companies because we haven't developed a domestic wind industry here in Canada. So we should create Canadian jobs in wind power because this is going to be a huge burgeoning industry, and that would be the kind of green-collar jobs that would replace any lost income for this very small bit of income that the fisheries of Newfoundland or fishermen of Newfoundland have from the commercial seal hunt.
Sounds pretty good to me. I want to get on to factory farming. Sharon, you mentioned that in the animal protection plank, the Green Party would like to phase out factory farming. I want to know more about the process about how you would go about that, so I'll open that up to either you or Jim.
I guess I can start on that. We would like to phase out not only factory farming of animals, but industrial agriculture entirely. That includes the crops and animals. And we would do that, first off, by removing federal subsidies from industrial agriculture activities. That would be the very first step. Right now, the smaller producers, the organic producers, they are struggling to gain a foothold in the market. And we've reached, I think, maybe 2% of the market is now organic, but getting beyond that 2% is proving very difficult because of unfair subsidies. The people who are producing food in a responsible, environmentally less damaging manner are unfairly penalized because the people who are polluting and destroying are getting the subsidies. So when you go to the grocery store and you go to buy say, a bag of potatoes. The potatoes that have been produced through mining the soil, through poisoning the people who live nearby, through poisoning the wildlife and the fish, those people are getting subsidies. So you're not really paying the real price of the bag of potatoes at the grocery store. You're paying a subsidized price. So then you go to look at the bag of organic potatoes and you see, well, they seem to cost a lot more. When in reality, when you factor in all the external costs like cancer, destruction of the environment, those kinds of things, you don't pay that price at the cash register. You pay those prices in your taxes. So at the cash register, the organic product seems to be a lot more expensive, but in fact, it's a huge bargain. So getting rid of the federal subsidies would be the very first thing we would do. Then we would take money and we would subsidize the organic and the small-scale farmers in order to get them up to a level where they're able to compete. Right now, there's still a lot of infrastructure in place, like the slaughtering facilities, the trade legislation we've got that still favors industrial factory farming type of activities. So the organic and the small-scale guys, they need some help initially to get them to the point where that would be the mainstream type of agriculture we have in Canada. So subsidies are a large part of it. Taxation, we would put taxes on things that pollute. So pesticides currently in PEI, you don't pay provincial sales tax on pesticides. So things like that, we would start not only charging tax, but we would charge extra taxes on things that pollute and destroy.
A couple other things to point out, and again to distinguish the Green Party from the NDP. The NDP is in power in Manitoba and Saskatchewan, where hog barns are allowed to operate. 10,000 hogs never see the light of day living in barns. Of course, they're exempted from environmental standards. They're exempted from labor laws in those provinces. This is under NDP governments. Neighbors are not able to sue for foul smells, and the feces and urine from these 10,000 animals are spread on the ground and stink to high heaven. Of course, neighbors can't sue over those foul smells. They contaminate groundwater and so on. And so this is the animal husbandry practice under NDP government. So there is quite a distinction between the Green Party. And what we need to do is look at the issues of health. When you have 10,000 chickens who are in a barn, never see the light of day, in tiny little cages. They clip their beaks so they don't peck at one another. They live on soiled straw, and so they're fed antibiotics so they don't develop rashes preemptively from living on these soiled straws, and then that affects us. Or if you look at antibiotics given to beef, or, you know, in the States, growth hormones given to beef. And then we eat that beef, and we wonder why there's a whole symptom called precocious puberty, where girls as young as 10 are developing their periods. Well, surprise, surprise, when you eat beef that's riddled with growth hormones, surprise, it affects humans and girls as young as 10 getting their periods. So, you know, what are we doing to ourselves when we have chemical factory farming, stuffing animals full of antibiotics, growth hormones? What does that do to our bodies of people who eat meat? And I mean, there are many people who become vegetarian or vegan just on that basis alone. Of course, there are many very good organic farmers who raise animals, free-range animals in a humane way, which is the antidote to this factory farming practice. But if you look at legislation and government regulation in provinces where the NDP is in power, they embrace factory farming in a very big, big way.
Yeah, I might add the Agriculture Minister of Ontario, I think these are stats from 2002, she said that due to contaminated meat, about 60,000 Ontarians visit the emergency ward in Ontario, amounting to, and these were conservative estimates, to at least 12 deaths and $200 million in Ontario tax money. And that is definitely quite a lot. Now, these kinds of standards that you would implement, they would definitely raise the prices, I would guess, of meat in stores, right?
They would raise the prices of factory-farmed meat, definitely. And that's what we want to do. That kind of meat is detrimental to your health, it's detrimental to the environment, and we want to price it so that it reduces consumption.
You know, we have to look at other practices. Like, the reason we have the BSE crisis is we've taken a herbivore and turned it into a cannibal. We take cows, which just eat grass, and we feed dead cow remnants to live cows, or dead pig or chicken remnants to live cows, and so on. And so there's practices there that are not in the interests of health of the animals or of people who eat animals. And why? Because large slaughterhouse facilities like to sell the protein of their offal. It's called offal. It's an awful practice. Like to sell it for profitability. And so here, the Canadian Food Inspection Agency historically has put the interests of large slaughter facilities ahead of the consumers and the public. Whereas organic farmers, of course, don't feed the remnants of dead animals to live animals. That's another barbaric practice that needs to be put an end to. But we need to look at this whole notion of what is in the best interest of animal and human health. And the other thing we haven't talked about, Rob, this morning is our agriculture is based on huge fossil fuel inputs. We live on 3,000-mile Caesar salads. And if for any reason the border with the United States was permanently closed, Canada is not food self-sufficient. We don't have food security. We have way too much beef, and we don't have enough fruit and vegetables. And Green Party's agricultural policy is based on creating sustainable agriculture, community-based agriculture, so that we can be self-sustaining and farmers can have a decent farm income, because they promote to the local economy. Because over time, fossil fuels are on a one-way track to be more and more expensive. And we can't have 3,000-mile Caesar salads coming to us from California. We can eat strawberries in winter, but they're going to be preserved strawberries like our grandmothers used to use. And we can extend the growing season in Canada with greenhouse technologies, which are very exciting, but we need to be food self-sufficient. We need to promote community agricultural programs where farmers have higher incomes by selling produce to people who live in cities. They sell, in essence, a share of their farm produce to families in the city. 80% of Canadians live in cities. So we're divorced from the land, and we need to be tied back into it.
And this recognition of the reality of the fossil fuel situation, in that we have reached peak oil, and that from here on out, oil is going to become increasingly expensive and eventually very scarce. Because industrial agriculture is completely and utterly dependent on fossil fuel, not only for transportation, but for the production of feed for animals, for the production of pesticides, the chemical fertilizers, all of those things, the heavy machinery used in the production, all of those things are so dependent on fossil fuels that the price of our food is going to be going up and up and up anyway. And what do the other political parties have in place? What plan B do they have in place to avert what is going to be, could be a disaster in terms of food self-sufficiency in Canada? If we do not put a plan B in place, if we do not look at moving away from this industrial factory farm agribiz situation we have now, all of a sudden we're going to be hit with scarcity of fuel and increased food costs, and potentially a lot of human suffering with people. Right now in the Maritimes, we have people who can't afford to buy oil to heat their homes this winter. And sooner or later, we're going to have people who are simply, I mean, we already do, of course, but even more so, we'll have people who can't afford to buy food because of the increasing cost of the fossil fuel inputs.
I want to ask, too, something that's perhaps something practical that people might be thinking about in the long term, about factory farms. If you refuse their subsidies and if you implement these standards, what's to stop them from perhaps lowering their worker standards, their labor standards, to make a profit?
Well, they've already done that in, for instance, Saskatchewan and Manitoba. NDP governments have exempted those operations from their own labor laws. So we need to have fair wages for people who work on farms so that they're not living below the poverty line or working poor. But there's one other issue, Rob, we haven't talked about, which is genetically modified foods. And our federal government gives $350 million of subsidies every year to GMO research. And when you add in the provincial subsidies, it's $650 million. So the better part of $1 billion of our taxpayers' money every year. And the wheat Board said if one single grain of GMO wheat got into the wheat pool, it would have instantly killed $1 billion of exports to Europe. So here we have the bizarre situation where our federal government and provincial governments are subsidizing the death of the family farm by promoting GMO research. And over 80% of Canadians want any product that contains GMO foods to be labeled. And this government has persistently resisted all efforts to label GMO foods. The Liberal Party is very GMO friendly. Huge subsidies. So the Green Party would automatically ban, eliminate, cut out all these subsidies to genetically modified products, and we would immediately force the labeling of them because consumers, we have a right to know what's in our food. And when we see this, you know, there's going to be a big shift away from it. And so why is the Liberal Party preventing Canadians from knowing what's in their food? That is a fundamental question for me.
And definitely for me. I mean, we talk about GMO foods on the show all the time. And so that definitely sounds like a great thing that the Green Party would implement. I want to ask one more question about, or maybe it's more of a comment about animal issues. It seems to me that many people don't understand the connection between environmentalism and animal issues, that they really go hand in hand. And it seems to me that the Green Party really gets that.
Well, I want to go back to maybe fundamentals. When Aboriginal people here in Canada we had 5 million bison or buffaloes, people often call them, on the plains. Vast, vast herds of buffalo that would travel on the plains of Canada. And native people, before they would kill a buffalo, would pray to its soul and ask it for forgiveness and say, I'm sorry for killing you, but I need to feed my family. And then when they killed the animal, they'd use its skin for clothing in their teepees. They'd use its meat for pemmican. They'd use its sinews for sewing, the bones for implements. Every part of that animal was used. In other words, if you're going to kill something, you have to inherently respect that it's given up its life and use everything, not waste anything. By contrast, the Western settlers, when they came out and the railroads ran across the plains, would shoot the buffalo from the train for sport, just to leave these rotting carcasses in the plains. A terrible tragedy. And so it's just to contrast that those two philosophies, one of respecting all life and only killing an animal in absolute need, and then only then, and using everything, as opposed to just killing for sport or killing for a hide, like the beavers were killed just for their pelts. And so it's a very different philosophy. And so the Green Party is to get back to respect all nature, to live in harmony with nature. And we need to see that we can live off the interest of what nature provides, but we can't attack the capital. In other words, there is a one-time endowment that is left here for all future generations, and we can live off the interest that one-time endowment provides, but we can't live beyond our means. And that is what we have been doing for over a century, two centuries. We've been actually attacking nature itself, mortgaging the future of our children and our grandchildren.
Sharon, did you want to comment?
Well, yeah, Jim's talking about philosophy. Well, we have a name for that philosophy, and I was very proud to be a part of a party that was so forward-thinking that in our last platform, the 2004 platform, we identified ourselves. We said, the party said that we support deep ecology, and that's something that was very important to me because I have been a supporter for deep ecology for many years, and I know it's attracted a fair number of people to the party since the last election. And if people aren't familiar with deep ecology, you can Google it and see what it's all about. But it's quite simple. It's an 8-point platform, which the most important aspects of it say that all life on Earth has inherent value. Mm. It doesn't matter what value humans put on it. All life has inherent value, and these values are independent of usefulness of human purposes. And that's a pretty radical philosophy when you think about it. On the surface, it may seem like, yeah, okay, that sounds reasonable. But if you really think about it, it's fairly radical because it undermines the entire industrial capitalist system. The Green Party does not support unending industrial economic growth. It's time for the world to power down. It's time for us to rein in economic growth and to live more in harmony with nature and to take only what we need versus what we want. And that is really a very defining feature for us as a party. As well, when you look at, I know there's a lot of talk about left, right, and many people in the party identify themselves with one or the other. I've always identified myself as someone from the left, and I know many other people do too. We appreciate what the left has given us in terms of Medicare and social programs and caring for our fellow humans. But on the other hand, what's common between the left and the right is the support of industrial growth and the support of unending economic growth. So while the left is for state capitalism, therefore worker ownership of capital, which is just as exploitive of what the right is advocating for, and that's private capitalism, exploitation by corporations. So ultimately the result is the same, whether you've got private capitalism or state capitalism, both are promoters of economic growth, of industrial capitalism, and of ultimately the destruction of the planet. We don't go there. We're against continued economic growth, and that's where the deep ecology philosophy comes into play.
And for anyone who wants more information on the Green Party's policies, their website is greenparty.ca. This is Animal Voices on CIUT 89.5 FM. We're talking with Sharon Labchuk, environment critic of the Green Party of Canada from PEI, and in studio today, Green Party leader Jim Harris. Jim, I wanted to ask you a few questions about, some general questions about the Green Party's policies. I also wanted to mention you've been involved in the Green Party for 17 years.
Over 17 now, yeah.
Over 17 years, and you led the last election. You led the party in the last election to a 4.3% election vote, which is, I think, unprecedented.
Yes, and the highest the party's ever had, about 600,000 people.
Right.
And in polls right now, we're at about 800,000. But what's really interesting is this summer, research showed, in addition to all those who in polls say they're already decided to vote for the Green Party, one in every three voters is thinking about it.
Hmm.
So in addition to the 6% recently in polls, 800,000 people, another 4.6 million are thinking about the Green Party. So there's a huge shift out there in the populace because they're so disillusioned, disenchanted with all the old line parties.
I know you said that you're neither left nor right, but out in front. Could you tell us what that means?
Well, Sharon was talking about it a little bit. You know, capitalists or people on the right have historically said it's capital that creates more value in society, so capitalists should have a bigger share of the pie, and I can understand that argument. Whereas people on the left have said, no, it's the workers who create more value in society. The workers should have a bigger share of the pie, and I can understand that argument. What we're saying is the pie is making us sick. We need a new pie. And if you look at the economic growth model, you talk to any economist here at U of T, Economics 101 will say growth is good. So when the Exxon Valdez spills its oil on the coast of Alaska, that's good because $2 billion is spent on cleanup. Or the fact that cancers are going to double here in Canada over the next 30 years is great because healthcare spending will have to increase. Or the fact that Mr. Bush has bombed Iraq to the point where over 100,000 Iraqi innocent women, children, and men have been killed is fantastic because world military expenditure has reached new all-time highs. Well, you don't have to be a rocket scientist to know that none of these things are good. And yet, within the way an economist look at the economy, these are all fantastic because GNP grows. Well, we need new measures of what is actually progress. And we call this the Genuine Progress Indicator, or GPI. And the GPI looks at the health of people, the health of communities, the health of ecosystems, the health of the whole planet. And you can't have an ever-rising GNP if you have an ever-plummeting GPI. And so we need to redefine what is progress. So the fact that our economy is growing, let's look at some of the side effects or what economists would call externalities. Today, one in every eight children has childhood asthma. Well, 20 years ago, it was one in 100. Why? Well, 4.3 billion the B word, billion kilograms of respiratory toxins are injected into our air every year so our kids can breathe it. Or here in Toronto, the Ontario Medical Association have said in Ontario, 5,800 people, almost 6,000 people, will die prematurely because of smog. We had a record number of smog days here in Canada, or in Ontario this summer. 17,000 hospital visits to emergency rooms in already overcrowded ERs. $7.8 billion of cost to Ontario taxpayers. Is this progress? I don't think so. And if this is progress, I don't want any progress. So we need genuine progress indicators that say, hey, this is not good if we move from one in every eight children having asthma to one in every five. That's not progress. If it is, well, then we should get excited when 100% of all children have asthma. Right. That's fantastic. Maybe when half our kids die, that is even better. No, we have to say enough is enough. This isn't progress at all. This is regress. And we need to really see the links between our economy, our health, our environment, our economic drivers and our systems, and have an integrated approach. And only the Green Party integrates all these areas into a holistic approach to politics.
Jim, I also want to ask you something that's on the top of people's minds sometimes, especially on the left, when they talk about the Green Party. Oh, well, Jim Harris used to be a conservative. It's just a leftist party led by a conservative. So I'm not a little fascinated by a former Tory becoming a Green. Could you tell us, first of all, how you made that journey?
Well, when I was in university, which was a long time ago, 25
not to
years
you
ago,
at all, yeah.
Late 70s, early 80s, the Liberal Party at the time was in government and was deficit spending. Every year another deficit, such that the cumulative debt was growing and was taking an ever greater portion of federal spending. In fact, it peaked at about 33 cents, 35 cents of every federal dollar just went to service the debt. And I knew if we continued deficit spending, at some point 100% of all government revenues would just be servicing the debt. So I knew it wasn't sustainable economically. So I became a progressive conservative. I was a red Tory, heavy emphasis on the progressive part, which no longer exists, but a progressive conservative in response to that. But then I saw Mr. Mulroney gave us the largest deficits in Canada's history. Mr. Reagan gave us the largest deficits in the world's history. And Mrs. Thatcher gave us the largest deficits in the UK's history. And I said this conservatism preaches fiscal responsibility but actually practices the opposite. And at the same time, I learned that a species is going extinct every 25 minutes, which is 1,000 times greater than the historical average over the evolution of our planet. And so with a fiscal debt, with a financial problem, economists tinker with interest rates, they adjust monetary supply, but no sleight of hand by an economist can bring back an extinct species, no act of parliament. And so I shifted from my focus being primarily on being fiscally responsible to being ecologically responsible. And with the ecological debt we're creating with future generations, no economist, no scientist, no politician can bring back an extinct species. And so we are really snuffing out, it is the death of life, the practice we're currently engaged in. So that became my focus. And in terms of this right-left issue, you know, because I am a progressive conservative 20 years ago, you know, the NDP has said the Green Party is a right-wing party. So let's play a little game. I want you to play along with me, Rob, here. And I'm going to read some statements off, and you tell me if you imagine these statements would ever come out of Mr. Harper's mouth in this election, okay?
All right.
The Green Party is, always has been, and always will be, unequivocally opposed to the war in Iraq. The Green Party unequivocally opposed the anti-missile ballistic system. The Green Party unequivocally supports Kyoto, and in fact, Kyoto is just the very first step. The Green Party is unequivocal in calling for mandatory reductions of the largest CO2 emitters, because they represent 50% of the CO2 emissions. The Green Party unequivocally supports a women's right to choice. The Green Party unequivocally supports gay marriage. The Green Party unequivocally calls for refocusing Canada's military military role exclusively on peacekeeping efforts and humanitarian efforts worldwide. The Green Party unequivocally supports the legalization of marijuana to control, regulate, and tax it. The Green Party unequivocally opposes nuclear power and calls for its phase-out as we embark on the most aggressive energy conservation program anywhere in the world. The Green Party unequivocally supports democratic reform and will make it a key to any support that we give with our elected MPs after this election to any party. So Green Party is completely opposed to the situation in which 1.2 million children live below the poverty line in Canada, and we would not be giving $1.4 billion of subsidies to oil and gas interests this year while 1.2 million children live in poverty. So if you can imagine any of those statements coming out of Mr. Harper's lips this election, play along with me. Do you think, Rob, any of them are going to be made this campaign by Mr. Harper?
I highly doubt it, especially when he wants to open up the same-sex marriage debate again and to an open vote in the Senate. I think it just further proves his irrelevance, I think, in Canadian politics today, actually.
Absolutely. So then I'll give some little statements, and let's play a game. Do you imagine any of these statements coming out of the NDP this election? The Green Party is completely opposed to the practice of clear-cutting. Of course, the NDP allows clear-cutting in British Columbia. Under the NDP government, this was allowed. The Green Party is completely opposed to the construction of any nuclear power plants, new nuclear power plants. The NDP allowed Darlington Nuclear Power to continue when it was in power in the early 90s. The Green Party is completely opposed to subsidizing car companies like Ford and GM that have the highest CO2 average emissions of any car companies, major car companies in the world. The NDP, of course, supports the third of $1 billion of subsidies because it was CAW jobs. The Green Party is completely opposed to Saskatchewan uranium mining, which we can't guarantee it's not used for making nuclear weapons. Of course, that's under an NDP government. And the Green Party is completely opposed to the commercial seal hunt, which, of course, the NDP fired or pushed out Rick Smith, a very honorable man who is completely opposed to the seal hunt. They pushed him out from being Jack Layton's chief of staff because he personally opposed the seal hunt. So, you know, can you imagine any of those statements coming from the NDP? So there is a very clear distinction between the Green Party and the NDP.
Yeah, it seems the NDP is trying to please everyone all the time. It seems like the Green Party, they're not afraid of pissing some people off to make some real progress. You know, if I can say that. Well, it seems to be true. I mean, some things need to be looked at and need to be regarded as fact. I mean, as you say, some of these things that are killing people, you know, you're not afraid of perhaps making some people angry and taking things away. But it'll actually be good for Canada in the long run.
Well, you have to stand up for what you believe in.
Right.
I don't know very many people in the Green Party that would go to another party and buy into what they're feeding Canadians. I mean, we have values, we have principles, and we just absolutely could not stand up for, you know, continued economic growth, for clear-cutting, for factory hog barns in Manitoba, for aerial pesticide spraying in the Maritimes. For people I know in the party, that's just absolutely impossible to stand up for those kinds of things.
And we have 8 minutes left, and I realize I didn't open up the phone, so I would like anyone who wants to ask either Jim Harris or Sharon Labchick a question to give us a call at 416-946-7000. Jim, I wanted to give you a chance to comment on some of the things that I've read about you in the press and online. I read reports that you're authoritarian, that you pursued the Green Party because leading a small party was an easier route than leading a large one. Some questions about questionable financing within the party, and that several people have resigned from the Green Party in protest to some of your decisions. I want to give you a chance to comment on all that.
Well, first off, there was a story on CP that came from, the source was an employee who was fired with cause, and we have actually filed complaints with Elections Canada under Section 91, because it's illegal in an election to knowingly make false statements. So he's going to have to answer to both Elections Canada and a libel suit that we've filed against him. So that's on the CP report. What was the other couple ones?
That you were authoritarian in nature.
Oh,
it's a very top-down party.
The Green Party works all the decisions for the party are either made by general meetings, like the seal hunt being 93% voted on, or by council. And, in fact, I'm just one vote on council, a council of 21. And Greens are very independent thinkers, and so there's no way that that I can control council when council makes up its own mind on these things.
Sure, and that you pursued the Green Party because leading a smaller party was easier than leading a large one.
Well, I mean, I've only been leader for the last 3 years, and remember, sure. I've been a member of the party for over 17 years, so it might be sexy to be green right now. Oh, behave. But, you know, I joined the party when it wasn't quite so sexy. We weren't even on the radar screen. And now everybody thinks they're you know, we have a lot of equity in the party. In fact, you know, the NDP is trying to say they're green. You know, the Liberals brought out a budget that they said was a green budget. Everybody thinks it's sexy to be green now. Mm. So, no, I've been there when we were a voice in the, literally, in the wilderness, you know.
And Sharon, did you want to comment on any of that?
Well, I am involved. I am involved at the in the party now, and in all manner of different committees and different levels. But it's still, I mean, I know Jim because I've driven with Jim around New Brunswick and PEI on a leaders tour, and we were glued together, he and I and another fellow in this car for 5 days, so I got to know Jim somewhat in that time. And I have to say, we really just pointed him in the direction he was to go, told him what newspaper he was going to be talking to, and let him go. I mean, he was pretty much putty in our hands for that 5 day trip. We pretty much told him where he was going and what he was going to do.
Okay, all right. Well, we do have a caller on the line. I want to give them a chance to ask their question. Caller, what's your name?
My name's Paul.
Hi, Paul. Do you have a question or comment?
Yeah, I have a question for Jim, is it?
Yep.
I understand he's going to try and eliminate factory farming.
That's
but,
right.
But given the fact that all farming, all flesh food farming is unsustainable, including organic flesh food farming, how is that a solution? The only solution is to eliminate the consumption of flesh foods if you really care about the environment.
Well, that's a great question, Paul. I mean, if you follow the works of people like Robbins or Diet for a Small Planet, of course, we can grow far more protein per acre when we look at vegetable proteins than animal proteins. So, yes, a Diet for a Small Planet philosophy is absolutely the way to go. What we do is we talk about taking there are two sets of goals we're talking about. One are long-term goals and one are short-term goals. And long-term, we need to have sustainable agriculture within the global context. But short-term, what do we have to do? We have to work to eliminate the most egregious practices first. You know, so our energies has to be directed to stopping the $650 million of subsidies annually to GMOs. It has to be to stop the injection of antibiotics into chickens in 10,000 chicken birds.
Right, I understand that concept.
So we
What I'm saying, Jim, is this. Where are all those flesh eaters, where are they going to get their flesh from?
Well, Paul, the thing is that we can't.
But the organic farming is not going to be organic feed farming will not be able to support that amount of people.
Can I jump in here?
Sure, yeah, Sharon, go ahead.
Yeah, I want to just confirm that our plan is not to merely substitute factory farming with an organic farming regime of the same nature and the same scale. I mean, that's definitely not part of our plan. Our plan is to get rid of the factory farming and replace it with small scale organic farms. Now, on a small-scale organic farm, you absolutely cannot keep animals in that kind of intensity or even those numbers. And let me just say, I'm a vegetarian, and I don't support flesh eating. But I recognize that in order to move to that position, it requires not only legislation, but a huge change in consciousness. And for a political party, I think, to come out and say that we're going to ban flesh eating entirely, I don't think we're going to get too far if that was going to be our immediate objective. I think our immediate objective is to get rid of the factory farming. And in the process of moving to smaller organic farming, I think that will automatically bring down the number of animals used in farming and the number of animals available for consumption. And in the process, we can start changing people's consciousness towards eating animals.
In order to do that, you'd have to encourage people to stop eating animals, not to eat organic, aren't
they? It actually does say on the Green Party's website, though, on the Animal Protection Plank, that they are hoping to reduce animal consumption generally through all of these measures, and that hopefully through that process, more people will be awakened and their consciousness will be tweaked to what's actually going on with animals, and that we should not be eating animals, that they are indeed killing us at the same time. Okay, Paul, thanks for your call.
All right.
We've got just 1 minute left, unfortunately. This could have been 2 hours.
Well,
Jim, I want to hand it over to you.
Well, I'd like to say, we've clearly shown how the Green Party is unique amongst political parties in Canada, and our voice is very important to this election. And we were, for instance, shut out of the televised leaders debate.
Right.
And so your listeners need to go to our website if they've liked what they've heard and believe in democracy. And we have a petition at greenparty.ca that you can sign to say the Green Party should be included in the next two leaders' debates. And roughly 35,000 people have already signed it. Only 10,000 people submitted questions to the leaders of the old line parties. And the reason it's so important that we be included is we are talking about these issues, which no other party is talking about. And so the very fact that we were excluded means this issue wasn't talked about in the televised leaders' debate. And so everybody who cares about these issues has to protest, because otherwise this issue just isn't even, these issues aren't even talked about, because there's a collusion amongst all the old line parties that they don't want to talk about this. So we have to get more voices heard. Our voice needs to be heard in the televised leaders' debate. So go to greenparty.ca, sign the petition, and send out emails to all your friends in your address book to drive them to the site to sign it as well. Because once we have 50,000, we have five times more people wanting us in the debates than are interested in asking the leaders of the old line parties questions.
Indeed, and the animal advocacy movement and environmental movement in Canada is very big. And if we can just get connected and get together and actually agree on something, we could actually make a dent in the next election. Sharon, do you have any last thoughts?
I think that people need to vote for the party that best represents their values and their principles. Strategic voting will only bring one bad government after another.
Yes, if you take the lesser of two evils approach, if you vote for a lesser evil to avoid a greater evil, unfortunately, what you're left with is evil government.
And we
have to vote for something, for a party we believe in that mirrors our values and ethics. And the reason that everybody is using the green label today is because we won 600,000 votes in the last election. And that is what is forcing all the other parties to begin adopting our policies. So if you really care about the issues we've been talking about for the last hour, only a vote for the Green Party is going to force the other parties to really adopt them. Because if you vote for any other party, you're voting for either subsidizing GMOs or firing people who have a conscience and are absolutely opposed to the seal hunt, or, you know, of course, the Conservative Party, which we won't even talk about it.
No, indeed. There's no need to mention them. All right. Well, Jim, I want to thank you so much for joining us in studio today. Sharon Labchuk, thank you for joining us from Prince Edward Island. And thank you for listening. You're listening to Animal Voices on CIUT 89.5 FM. The show will be archived at www.animalvoices.ca, hopefully within the next few days. And perhaps we'll try and get in touch with you, Jim, before the next election. If you have any questions, email us at animalvoices@CIUT.FM. You've been listening to Animal Voices. Stay tuned to Roadrunner.